Pranamayam, composed of the modes of material nature, deham, their bodies, sadhya, immediately, prakshina, thoroughly counteracted, bandhana, all their bondage of karma. Dusaha Prishta Viraha Tivrata Paduta Shubha Dhyana Praptya Chuta Shlesha Nivritya Kshina Mangala Tameva Paramatmanam Jhara Buddhyapi Sangata Jahur Gunamayam Deham Sajya Prakshina Bandana Dusaha Prishta Viraha Tivrata Padhuta Shubha Dhyana Pratya Chuta Shlesha Nivritya Kshina Mangala Tameva Paramatmanam Jara Buddhyapi Sangata Jahur Gunamayam Deham Sudhya Prakshina Bandana. Please chant.
Dusaha Prishta Viraha Devata Padita Shubha Dhyana Prapta Chita Shlesha Nirvitya Kshina Mangala Tameva Paramatmana Jara Buddhyapi Sangata Nirvritya Kshina Mangala
तमेव परमात्मानं जारबुद्ध्यापि संगताः जहोर्गुणमयं देहं सद्यप्रक्षीणबन्धनाः. Translation: For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. So we have quite a long purport here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments upon this verse as follows. Here Shukadeva Goswami speaks in a peculiar way. He presents the intimate object the gopis attain as if it were an external idea, thus keeping its true nature secret from outsiders, while at the same time he reveals to the confidential devotees, well versed in the scientific conclusions of devotional service, the internal meaning that is his real purport. Thus to outsiders, Shukadeva says that Krishna gave the gopis liberation. But to the confidential hearers, Shukadeva reveals that when the gopis experienced separation from their beloved, there arose in them both immeasurable unhappiness and immeasurable happiness, and that they gradually achieved their desired goal. Thus the verse can be understood as follows. Because of their intolerable separation from their beloved, the gopis felt terrible agony, by which they caused all inauspicious things to tremble. In other words, when people in general hear of the gopis' extreme agony and separation from their beloved, they abandon thousands of inauspicious things, things even as fearsome as the subterranean fires of millions of universes, or the powerful poison swallowed by Lord Shiva. More specifically, those who hear of the gopis' love and separation give up their terrible false ego and, thinking themselves defeated, are shaken. When the gopis meditated on Lord Achyuta, he became manifest and personally came to them, and they experienced great joy by embracing his body, which was full of transcendental love for them. The gopis also experienced great joy by exhibiting personal characteristics and a sense of identification appropriate to such love. That joy made all their good fortune, both material and spiritual, seem paltry by comparison. The implication is that when other persons see how happy the gopis became upon embracing Krishna when he manifested himself directly before them, these other persons feel that thousands of so-called auspicious objects are insignificant by comparison, including all the sense gratificatory pleasures found in millions of universes, and even the supersensory pleasure of spiritual bliss, Brahmananda. Thus, hearing of the gopis' distress and the joy that arose, respectively, out of their separation from the Supreme Lord and their union with him, anyone can get rid of all the reactions of his past activities, both sinful and pious. Vaishnavas certainly do not think that sinful and pious reactions can be destroyed only by being lived out, since, after all, neither separation from the Supreme Lord nor direct association with him are in the category of karma. This kind of elimination of karmic reactions occurs in the stage of bhajan, for those who have come to the level of anartha nivritti. And thus the gopis thought of Krishna, the Paramatma or supreme worthy object of all love, as their paramour. Even though such a concept is ordinarily contemptible, the The gopis realized Krishna in an even fuller sense than did Rukmini and his other queens, who thought of him most respectfully as their husband. That thinking of the Lord as one's paramour is superior to thinking of him as one's husband is proved by the fact that unbridled pure love is superior to domesticated love. This idea is borne out by the following words of Sri Uddhava: Ya dushya jam swajanam arya patam chahitva. The ladies of Braja abandoned their families and their advanced religious principles, even though to do so is very difficult. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-61. In his pastimes on earth, Krishna often turns the most lowly things into the most elevated. As Bhishma stated, Krishna's pastimes of acting as Arjuna's chariot driver was even more elevated than the pastimes in which he acted as a mighty king of kings. Vichaya rata kutumba atta totre drita haya rashmini tach chirekshaniye. I concentrate upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, and who was very careful to protect Arjuna's chariot by all means. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.39. Similarly, in the Lord's appearance as Krishna, we see that the normally inferior conjugal rasa becomes better than the normally superior mood of shanta rasa, as also the attitude of loving a paramour becomes superior to the loving exchange between legitimate spouses, and lowly gunja necklaces, red oxide paste, and peacock feathers become better than the most excellent jeweled ornaments. But it may be objected, it is not fitting for the Supreme Lord to sport with women whose bodies have already been enjoyed by other men. This objection is replied to by the words beginning jahu. The word deham is used here in the singular form to indicate unity of category, even though the gopis are many. Some authorities say that by the power of yoga maya, the gopis' bodies disappeared in a way no one noticed. But other authorities say that the body referred to in this context is the inferior body, composed of the modes of material nature. Thus, by the prominence of the adjective gunamayam, it is understood that before the gopis heard the sound of Krishna's flute, their bodies had been twofold, material and spiritual, and upon hearing the flute, they gave up the material bodies which their husbands had enjoyed. We may analyze this as follows. When devotees begin prosecuting devotional service in accordance with the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, they engage their ears and other senses in pure devotion by hearing of the Lord, chanting his glories, remembering him, offering obeisances to him, giving him personal attendance, and so forth. Thus the devotees make the Lord's transcendental qualities the objects of their senses, as stated by the Lord himself, Nirguno mad apashraya, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-26. In this way, the devotees' bodies transcend the material modes. Yet sometimes the devotees may take as their sense objects mundane sounds and so on, and that is material. Thus a devotee's body can have two aspects, transcendental and material. According to one's level of devotional service, to that degree, the transcendental aspects of one's body become prominent and the material aspects diminish. This transformation is described in the following verse from the Bhagavatam, 11.2.42. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo viraktir anyatta chaisha tika eka kala prapajyamanasya yathashnatasyus tushti pushti kshut apayo nukhasam. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the same way that pleasure, Nourishment and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. When one achieves totally pure love of God, the material portions of the body disappear and the body becomes completely spiritual. Nonetheless, so as not to disturb the false opinions of atheists, and so as to protect the confidentiality of devotional service, the Supreme Lord usually has his illusory energy exhibit the demise of the gross body. An example of this is the disappearance of the Yadavas during the Maushala Leela. Sometimes, however, to proclaim the excellence of Bhakti Yoga, Krishna will allow a devotee to go back to Godhead in his self-same body, as in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. We can cite evidence for this point in the 25th chapter of the 11th canto, text 32. Yene me nirjita somya bhuna jivena chitta ja bhakti yogena man nishto madbhavaya prapajyate. A living entity who conquers the modes of material nature which are manifested from the mind can dedicate himself to me, Krishna, by the process of devotional service and thus attain pure love for me. Here the Lord states that the defeat and destruction of that which is composed of the modes of material nature can be brought about only by the process of devotional service. Therefore, what we should understand from the present verse of the Bhagavatam is that the gopis, who could not go to see Krishna, had their inauspicious material bodies removed or burned up, while their auspicious spiritual bodies, far from being destroyed, simply grew more prominent because of the ecstasy the gopis felt by embracing Krishna in meditation. Thus their bondage was completely destroyed. By the help of Yoga Maya, they got free from ignorance and also from the prohibitions of their husbands and other relatives. We should not make the mistake of explaining this falling away of the gopis' bodies as being the result of their dying. As the Lord himself states, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-37, Yamaya kridata ratriyam vanesmin braja astita alabdha rasa kalyanyo mapur madvirya chintaya. Some of those all auspicious gopis could not directly join me in enjoying the rasa dance on that night in this Vrindavan forest. Yet still they achieved my association by remembering my transcendental pastimes. By using the word kalyanya in this verse, the Lord implies, even though these gopis wanted to give up their bodies because of their husband's prohibitions and the torment of separation from me, for them to die at the very beginning of the most auspicious festival of the rasa dance would have been displeasing to me and thus inauspicious. So they did not die. More evidence that the gopis who were prevented from going to see Krishna did not physically die is provided by a statement of Sri Shukadev's later in this canto, 10:47-38. Ta uchur udavam pritas tat sandesh agata smritihi. Then they, the gopis, replied to Uddhava, feeling satisfied because his message had reminded them of Krishna. Here we understand that the gopis speaking to Uddhava were the ones who had not had the chance to participate directly in the rasa dance because of being held captive in their homes. Thus the conclusion is that they gave up their material bodies without dying. Parched by the intense heat of separation, their material bodies gave up their materiality and became purely spiritual, just like the bodies of such great devotees as Dhruva Maharaj. This is the meaning of the gopis giving up their bodies. The following analogy illustrates the statuses of the various gopis. By observing 7 or 8 ripe mangoes on a tree, we can ascertain that all the fruits on the tree are ripe. Then we can pick them all and bring them home, where in due course the sun's rays and the other agents will make them fine-looking, fragrant, and delicious, fit to be offered to the king for his enjoyment. When the time comes for the king to take his meal, a discriminating servant can choose those fruits ready to offer him. From the appearance of the fruits, the servant can tell which are ripe in the middle, but still raw on the outside, and thus not yet fit for the king. By the application of a special heating process, these remaining fruits will become ripe in 2 or 3 days, and then they too will be ready to offer to the king. Similarly, among the Munichari gopis who took birth in Gokula, those who completely gave up the materiality of their bodies and very early in life achieved purely spiritual bodies were able to remain untouched by any other man. Thus, Yogamaya allowed them to join the Nitya Siddha and other advanced gopis when they went to meet Krishna. Other Munichari gopis still retained some connection with the external material body, but even they, after being parched by the heat of separation from Sri Krishna, gave up the materiality of their bodies and assumed perfectly transcendental bodies, purified of all taint of contact with other men. On the night of the Rasa dance, Yogamaya sent some of these gopis out behind those who had already gone out. Others, who Yogamaya saw still had a slight amount of contamination, she kept back to further purify with the heat of separation, and then she sent them out on some other night. After enjoying the pleasures of the Rasa dance and other pastimes with Krishna, the Munichari gopis who had participated went back to their homes when the night was over, as did the Nitya Siddha and other advanced gopis. But now Yogamaya protected these Munichari gopis from the material association of their husbands. In other words, these gopis were devoid of any selfish attachment for husband, children, and so on. Since these gopis were thoroughly immersed in the great ocean of love for Krishna, their breasts dried up so that they could not feed their infants. And to their family members, they appeared as if haunted by ghosts. In conclusion, it is not unseemly that the gopis, who were previously in material association, joined in the Rasa dance. Some authorities, however, maintain that the gopis who were kept back in their houses did not have children. According to them, whenever such words as apatya, children, are used in verses yet to come, these words refer to the children of co-wives, to adopted children, and to nephews and nieces. So that ends the purport, all directly from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Difficult to summarize a purport like that. The main point seems to be that by the fire of separation from Krishna, we burn up our material bodies, our material consciousness. Lord Kapila Dev says, Jaryatyashu yakosham nirginam analoyata. Devotional service is like a fire that burns up the subtle body. Of course, the subtle body is the seed of the material body. The subtle body carries us from one material body to the next. And it's the subtle body that has to be purified. In the Bhagavad Gita, we read about yoga, so much about yoga, especially the 6th chapter talks about the yoga system. So what is yoga about? Yoga is about the mind, purifying the mind, controlling the mind. The image is given there, the yogi who can control his mind. It's like a lamp in a windless place. It's a nice image because if you ever just like if you have a candle in your room, the slightest breeze and it will flicker. It's very difficult for a lamp, light, flame, to just stay perfectly still. There's always some little disturbance making it move. So to have a mind that's just like perfectly still, because what is the mind's nature? It's like that flame. Any little thing will make it flicker, leave. We try to concentrate. We know in our own spiritual practices, at least I can say for myself, trying to control the mind is so difficult. Get a few mantras in and I feel proud of myself, and then, whoop, I'll think about that thought for the next 10 minutes instead of chanting Hare Krishna. And those of you who are brahmanas know what it's like to try to actually meditate in the Gayatri Mantra. So it's very difficult. Meditation is difficult because the mind is so flickering. So yoga is about controlling the mind. The yogis, of course, they have a very difficult time because they're just, what are they doing? They're sitting and just trying to control it by their own endeavor, which is extremely difficult. This is something interesting. I was just listening to a reading. I recorded translation to the Bhagavatam, and I was listening to the story of Vidura returning after pilgrimage and going to Dhritarashtra after all the battle and everything, and preaching to Dhritarashtra and telling him that, you know, now it's time to leave home. Now your body is falling apart and so on. Vidura was such a powerful preacher. Dhritarashtra, who was so implicated in so many bad things. So the amazing thing about this story is, of course, Yudhishthira comes. So Dhritarashtra actually leaves, goes to the north, and Gandhari follows him. And then Yudhishthira comes in the morning after doing his morning program. He comes to see his elderly uncle, offer his respects to Dhritarashtra, even though Dhritarashtra has treated him so badly. So he comes to offer his respects to Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, but they're not there. And Sanjaya is there. And so he asks Sanjaya, did I do something wrong? Did I offend them? Where have they gone? And Sanjaya says, oh, they have cheated me. They have left me here. Sanjaya is another. I was thinking there's so many biographies in the Bhagavatam you could write about so many different people. Imagine Narada Muni. Boy, you could write a lot about Narada Muni. He's all over the place in the Bhagavatam. So even Sanjaya, you see what a dedicated servant he was. He was a disciple of Vyasadeva, but still he was so dedicated to the service of his master, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. So he's lamenting that they're gone. And then Yudhishthira, he's lamenting too. So Narada Muni arrives on the scene. And he preaches to Yudhishthira because Yudhishthira is lamenting. And basically he preaches to Yudhishthira that, you know, we come together by the force of time, and the Supreme Lord is controlling all these things, and these relationships are temporary, and familial affection and is a bad thing in this world. It keeps us from spiritual light and so on. And then he tells him that Dhritarashtra has left to perform austerities and perform meditation and yoga. And he talks about what he has to do. We have these descriptions in the Bhagavatam about you separating the elements and amalgamating the senses, and these descriptions where at least I can never quite figure out exactly what's going on. So you think, wow, this is going to take him a really long time to do all this, to master this. And then Narada Muni says, so in 5 days from now, he will burn up his body in the fire of meditation. So it only took Dhritarashtra 5 days to perfect his yoga, control his mind, perfect the yoga process, and attain some kind of spiritual fulfillment. So he was able to do it somehow. It's quite difficult to understand because we don't think of Dhritarashtra having practiced this. But of course, by the grace of Krishna, some of these things happen just for our edification so we can learn. So in any case, generally speaking, to control the mind by mystic yoga practice is extremely difficult. But that's what we have to do. We have to purify the mind. Now we have the example of Ambarish Maharaj. Prabhupada explains that, of course, not only should the mind be engaged, but everything should be engaged. The yoga practice actually begins with controlling the physical body. You control the physical first, and then it becomes easier to control the mind. In fact, in that story of Dhritarashtra, it says there that he started bathing 3 times a day. Then it says he gave up eating and only drank water. And it said there that this helps to control the mind and to break off all familial affection. So somehow, if you only drink water, you lose your attachment to your family, according to this verse in the Bhagavatam. So if you don't want that to happen, then don't fast only on water. So in any case, you control the body. It helps to control the body. Of course, we do that too when we fast, because we understand that controlling the body, the eating, then makes the mind, supposed to anyway, makes the mind more peaceful for fixing on Krishna. So Maharaj Ambarish is given as the example of someone who engaged all of the senses. First, he engaged his mind by thinking of Krishna. Savaya mana Krishna padaravindayo. He engaged his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Then all the other senses is described. Smelling flowers offered to the Lord and using his legs to walk to the temple of the Lord and so on. So this is perfect yoga. It's one thing to control the physical body just by practicing asanas. We see what happens. The yogis, they get carried away. Just like today, people, that's all they know is the asanas. And even there are those who are extremely accomplished in this. And they can do all kinds of twisting and this and that and contortions and gymnastics, as Prabhupada would call it. Because they think this is the perfection. So maybe they have good digestion, as Prabhupada would say. But what is it doing to their consciousness? They're completely absorbed in the bodies. So the point of practicing asanas, and then more subtle is pranayama, the breathing process, so it's meant to calm the mind. So if we don't struggle in that way to purify our minds, to calm our minds, we do it by hearing about Krishna. Everything about Krishna. Now we're hearing the most intimate pastimes of Krishna. And by now our minds, having been purified by reading 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're supposed to be more peaceful. Dhira. We should have attained a certain level of dhira, mental composure, not being agitated. And we can listen to these intimate pastimes of Krishna, which in some ways to us, because we're still conditioned souls, they still seem like ordinary affairs between the boys and girls. We know from having heard otherwise that this is not the fact. But still, because we're like that story of the cow, right? The cow that saw fire. So every time after it saw it, which of course scared it and ran away. So then after that, every time she saw red, she ran away. She always thought it was a fire. So because we're still conditioned souls, our minds are still influenced by this material energy. But we have a process of purification. Cheto darpana marjanam. We are purifying our minds day by day, step by step. Anudinam. Rupa Goswami says, anudinam, daily. Syat Krishna nama charitari sitapya vidya. The avidya of ignorance, or the avidya, the disease of jaundice, which is making our vision. There's another nice example. When you're jaundiced and everything looks yellow, everything has a tint on it, a film on it, or when you wear sunglasses, you can get different colored tints. So you can get rose if you want. And then the whole world looks rosy. But it's not the reality. So we see our tinted vision, covered vision, opaque, it's actually, through a glass darkly, that phrase is there in Christian mysticism. The mystics, they're trying to perceive God through their meditation and practice, and they get sort of a faint image, some faint realization, faint picture of God. It's sort of like you're looking through a window that's dirty. So our Cheto Dharpanam Arjanam, cleansing the mirror, you can say, or the window, so that we can see clearly. And we have such a powerful way to do it. Our meditation, Srila Prabhupada says early in the Bhagavatam, that reading Srimad Bhagavatam is meditation on Brahman in the most palatable form. The yogis, they try to meditate on who knows what. They have all kinds of concocted things they may try to meditate on. A flame, maybe. One thing they try to meditate on. Fix the mind, because the idea is to fix the mind so it doesn't waver. But we don't have to fix the mind on one thing. Well, it is one thing, but it's Krishna, so it's everything. It's unlimited. All the leelas of Krishna, we're still fixing on one thing, tivrena bhakti yogena. We're bringing it down to one thing, but that one thing is everything. Krishna is, we know, andandarastha paramanutriandarastha goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhuto. He's in one place too, he's in Goloka Vrindavan, but he's also everywhere at the same time. So by one pointed meditation on Krishna, we can't get bored. We don't need to get bored. There's no need to get bored. In the Bhagavatam, there's so much there. It's all Krishna. We begin at the lotus feet of Krishna, meditating. And the Bhagavatam is so massive, who can remember even all the stories, all the pastimes that are there? I'm always reading it and I say, oh, really? I must have read this before, but I don't remember this. So many things are there. So many details. How can you remember them all? Even Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of the Bhagavatam. There's so much Krishna. People, they think, oh, how can you just be Krishna, Krishna all the time? But that's who we are. We're the Krishnas. Because we're only about Krishna. At least we're meant to be. Here in the beginning, or in the verse, the word is there, viraha. So we're supposed to have some realization of this. Viraha means separation. We're meant to execute our devotional service with the mood that, well, just like these gopis, they just had to go to Krishna. So we're supposed to feel this also, this intense desire. I have to go to Krishna. I'm burning in this material world. I have to burn in separation from Krishna, so I'll stop burning in this material world. Dahyamana, Prahlad Maharaj says, Shokagnida, Sakala Yoni Shuddhayamana. In all the different species of life, I'm just burning and burning and burning. Samsara Dhavana Lalita Loka. But we're so foolish and ignorant that we think, oh, it's not so bad. The Bhagavatam says, in all different species, Kapila Dev says, the living entity is so covered that he takes pleasure even in hell. Even when he's burning in hell, he thinks, well, there's probably a good side to this, something, something. You have to look at the positive, right? The power of positive thinking. I'm sure, you know, I can eat toast or something, you know. I'm burning in this fire, at least something is cooking. Even though it's my own flesh, just like the camel's eating his own blood, enjoying it. So that's our situation. We have to understand that. So we should be burning with a desire to hear about Krishna. We should be eager for this. Avyartha kalatvam, this symptom of bhava. Oh, a moment shouldn't pass where I'm not hearing Hare Krishna or reading Prabhupada's books or thinking about Krishna somehow. Don't let me get distracted. Oh, I don't want to. There should be almost a fear. I don't want to be distracted, because what if I die in the next moment? It can happen. It can happen. It happens to people. Or you get a stroke. These things happen, right? People, you get an aneurysm, brain aneurysm, and then you can't talk anymore, or something else happens. Something goes haywire in your body. Just out of the blue, these things happen. We think we're safe, but it's all up to Krishna. We're not independent. We're completely dependent. I'm speaking now, but I could just go dumb in a moment. It's not my power. Huh? Krishna has the power. Krishna has the power. Krishna's making me speak now. Of course, literally he is, because what could I say about this unless Krishna has already told me everything? Prabhupada has given me the words to speak. Otherwise, ask some person on the street, give a dissertation on Krishna. What? Huh? Who? What? They can say nothing. They're dumb. Mukam karoti vachalam bangam langayate girim. The spiritual master makes a dumb man speak. So that's literally true. Because when you're speaking nonsense, you're dumb. What is it? Your words are like the babble of sea waves. They're blah, 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 blah. Nothing. And no, meaningless. Gram Yakata is meaningless, actually. It has no benefit. Actually, it has the opposite. Detriment. Gram Yakata no Shunibe, Lord Chaitanya said. Don't hear Gram Yakata. I was just reading yesterday, Prabhupada said. He was talking to a reporter, and he said, these devotees are not interested in mundane news. They don't have any time for that. They're interested in the news of Krishna. That's what they want to hear. That's what they're eager to hear. So this is viraha, to have some enthusiasm. No, I want to hear, because there's so much there. What am I going to miss? I'm going to miss an episode. It's like people, they get, people just like, especially, we have the picture of the lady staying at home all day, watching her soaps, especially older ladies, soap operas. The people get so addicted to these things. Some of them have been on for like 30, 40 years, the same show has been on. I mean, can't be the same characters, I wouldn't think, but somehow. And then people, they can't miss, of course, now they can record everything, so if they have to go out with the hairdresser or something, they can still come home and watch their soap. But they're so addicted to them, they can't miss them. So we should feel like that about Krishna. Oh, what if the rest of my life I might miss something in the Bhagavatam I read, I forgot. It's so important. Because all of these things, we know that the Bhagavatam is meant for training us. We forget that we're supposed to be trained. Just like if you go to school, for example, it's an education. So you start in the first grade or preschool. First, you don't know anything. You don't know even A, B, C. So you learn gradually, day by day. You learn, and then, oh, A, B, C, D. Oh, look, Mommy, A, B, C, D, E. Look what I learned. And then after cat, hat, bat, you start learning some words. And then a little more, a little more. Then the reading level improves. Then after a while, you're writing doctorate thesis about some nonsense, unfortunately. Better you hadn't learned your ABCs. But anyway, the idea is that you make step by step. That's an education. So the Bhagavatam is actually an education. It's a purification. Purification of the heart. It's a course of study. It's a lifetime course of study and realization. It's supposed to take us step by step. But if we're truants, if we're not going to school, if we're not doing our homework, if we're dozing out in class, if nodding out in class, or talking to the kid behind us, or putting chewing gum in Susie's hair, or whatever, not paying attention, then the benefit won't be there. So we can wonder, well, now we're in the 10th canto, we're supposed to be ready for this. Have I been spacing out, gone through all these cantos? Maybe I missed a few classes up there. Had some sick days, maybe a little too many. But this is our... So maybe I need to go back in the beginning. Read again from the beginning. I got a lot of catching up to do. makeup, a lot of makeup days. Just like in the school calendar, the kids, they have to have a certain number by law, right? And a certain number of school days. So if something happens, no, I was from the north, so it snowed, and we used to have a certain number of snow days. You had too many, then you had to make them up at the end of the year. So maybe we've had a few snow days because we've been snowed in by Maya, that we have to make them up. We should be eager, enthusiastic, learn all that's there in these books. If it was good enough for Prabhupada to spend his time writing them, then certainly it's worth our time to read them. And we don't even have to get up at midnight or 11 o'clock. Prabhupada would sleep from 10 to 12 maybe. We can get up and write his books. We can sleep 6, 7, 8 hours, whatever we need. But we need to read these books and try to, someday, if we want to be actually like the gopis, it's not just going to be presto somehow. Some wizard is going to come along and transform us. We have to make the effort. And we can be transformed in an instant, but what is required, lolium, we have to want it. We have to show Krishna that we want it. All right, we started late. It was a long purport, so I'll just stop here. Let me just read through the translation again. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the supreme soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus, their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. Any questions, comments? Hari Parayana Prabhu?
So the translation says that their ecstasy exhausted their material piety. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand.
Yeah. Well, that was explained in the purport. Well, one way, there were a few different things, let's see. But the last line of the one paragraph said, that joy made all their good fortune, both material and spiritual, seem paltry by comparison. So exhausted in the sense that minimized it. It became, in a sense, nothing. Whatever, because we know that by good karma, then you can get happiness, basically. You get happy material things, especially Janmaishwarya, Shruta, Sribhir, beauty, education, good birth, so on. So they weren't interested in those things are nothing when they're experiencing the joy of association with Krishna. So that's the idea. Of course, the other part is when you transcend this material world, you transcend everything, good karma, bad karma, all karma, when you're in a liberated soul. There's no karma. It's all coming from Krishna. It's all directly in relationship to Krishna. So there's really no question of karma in that stage of existence.
Yesham Twantigatam Papam.
Yesham Twantigatam Papam Jananam Punmakarmanam. Yes. You have to get free from all karma to really get dirdha vrata, determined in devotional service.
Actually, also Jiva Goswami Pad explained that the gopis, especially the Munichari gopis, they had been chanting Gopal mantra for so long, but they had not become yet perfected in it. But they got the grace of Ramchandra Bhagavan that they could take birth in Braj. So in one sense, they had siddha. They had obtained their goal to obtain the body of gopis. But their prema had not become mature. And they were all at different stages. Some swarup siddhi, some vastu siddhi, but not mature like this. And according, Jiva Goswami says, to how much they associated with nitya siddha gopis, their prema developed. Those who associated more with nitya siddha gopis When they heard the flute, they were helped by Yogamaya because she created duplicate bodies for the husbands. For these gopis who could not get out, then, because they had not associated so much, this separation mood that came in their heart burnt away the last vestiges of what had blocked them. So even the gopis who did obtain Ras, they also had some vestige of Subhagya Mad. They felt, oh, we've arrived, we made it here. And so when Krishna disappeared from Ras dance, in that separation, their last vestige was also burnt up. So their prem was able to mature to its stage. It's a very long thing, but you can be perfect and still have to develop. I think somebody asked a question yesterday about that. And even though they have prem, until their prem comes to anurag, which is the base platform of love in conjugal ras, there's still development, and it happens by association with those nityasiddha gopis.
Yeah, we've learned from Prabhupada that when we leave this world, attain perfection, then we actually go to wherever Krishna is performing his pastimes in this earthly plane, and then we get more training there. That's why we go there. We actually get more training before we go back to Goloka Vrindavan. There's an interesting point about the husbands in Goloka Vrindavan that's explained. I was just reading this recently, that the gopis actually have no association with their husbands in the spiritual world. It's just all kind of an illusion that they're married. And the husbands think that they have these wives, and the gopis they think, but they actually, and I think it's stated something like, they don't even get close to their shadows, what to speak of, the gopis themselves. So there's no contact at all between the gopis and their so-called husbands. It's all just part of churning the ecstasy of the intensity of the emotion to make it parakya rasa relishable and so on. You have a question there?
So this kind of maturation of prem doesn't happen in Goloka? It's only in Gokula, correct?
Yes, in Gokula, maturation takes place by association with
Nityasiddha. But not in Goloka. In Goloka, everyone's prem is perfected?
Yeah, you perfect it in Gokula, and then you go to Goloka.
Yes.
So there's no this unripe mangoes.
No more work to be done when you get
unripe there. Mangoes in Goloka.
But also for the gopis here, because those Monichai gopis did not go to Guamira. So here, the gopis, because we're following Srila Prabhupada, and we have the chance to go to Guamira,
in Guamira, that separation mood will come. First from Guru, so a devotee will feel intense separation from his Guru, then gradually he'll feel separation from the associates of Mahaprabhu, and then gradually deep separation from Mahaprabhu himself, and that separation burns up, like these gopis, the Municharis, burns up what we have. So when we get to Gokul, Prakat Braj, then our association will be with Nityasiddha gopis following Rup Manjari, etc., etc.
Okay, I'm going to sign off here. You can keep going. Prabhupada ki jai.